Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, yeah, I think it's last minute. Things are a little crazy today. Wednesdays are unusual because there's so many stories. It's always a question of which ones do I want to cover. And this is a particularly interesting day because there are very few stories on election correction. You know, it seems like we're waiting for the Arizona audit to get done. We're waiting for the other audits to start. And the biggest news, of course, is Mike Lindell's symposium. And so that's going to be a lot of fun to watch as that happens. Yesterday was pretty good. I caught a lot of it, but it wasn't really a lot new that I hadn't heard before because I've been keeping up with it. The newest thing was the fact that the Colorado Secretary of State, who is a militant Marxist, George Soros clone, it raided the office of one of the county clerks' election offices while they were on their way, you know, flying to Mike Lindell's symposium. And that is perfectly characteristic. But that's something we need to look more into. Is how many offices, how many district attorneys, how many secretaries of state, you know, how many people are being strategically, you know, put in place by these people through vote fraud to take over our country. And the question I've got for David Jones is on the line too, and I'll get to him in just a second. But the question is, you know, if we try and fight these things fairly, you know, because we're the good guys, right? You know, the good guys are like, well, we have to beat them in the election. Well, you can't beat somebody in an election if they're committing fraud and they've got the results rigged and they've got the machines rigged and they've got the ballot counters rigged and they've got you know, the duplicate ballots and they've got, you know, suitcases of ballots under desks and they've got the judges, you know, tied into the system and the Supreme Court's tied into the system and the media is tied into the system and the Republican geldings, the GOP, the gelding old party is tied into the system and everybody's tied into the system. Is there any point in fighting that fairly? Because it's not a fair system and you can't fight, you know, you can't fight for your country by fighting fairly. You know, it seems like to me that we are justified in stealing the election from the people who have stolen the election. If we can hack better than they can hack, you know, why not? You know, and so the question becomes, you know, do we go to an honest election system when we actually have honest elections, when we've gotten rid of the cheating, when we've made it impossible to cheat? And what do we need to do to get that? And that's what I'm curious about. You know, so my moral standing, my ethics are being challenged right now by the fact that I think people, you know, on the good side are worrying too much about being fair and not worrying enough about hacking into their systems, you know, and creating in fact, I'll talk to David. Let's bring David on now. But I want to talk about creating, you know, cyber security attack squads. If anybody doxes you, we dox them, you know, and at what point do you have to start fighting back in a way that, you know, if the dishonesty is there, if they're planting people on the school boards and the Secretary of State's office and the, you know, the mayors and the governors and everybody else who's being planted all over this country, at what point do we say, no, we're going to hack your, you know, if we find that election's fraudulent, you know, before it happens or they're setting up for it, why don't we just hack them and stop it? Good morning, David. That's my opening thoughts today.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's for me, the strategy that I hold is hold them accountable. So if we expose the fraud in the elections, and then we make the people who cheated and lied and did corrupt things held their feet to the fire, they wouldn't want to do that anymore. There's more of us than them. So if they can't even go to the grocery store or go out and have a meal without being questioned or harassed, I guess, for lack of a better word, about the dishonesty, then they'll quit. They'll go away. We've seen that locally on six different occasions already. When you hold them accountable for the things that they've done, they just run away. They're all cowards anyway.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, just to introduce David. David Jones is one of the co-founders of Santa Rosa Volunteers, our main sponsor of the show right now, which is just wonderful. And we actually had a little bit of fun last Friday. We were at a rally for some of the folks that are trying to stop the vaccine mandate over at Ascension Sacred Heart in Pensacola. And we can talk about that in a minute, too. But I want to talk about this because holding them accountable is something that's never really been done, except in rare occasions where people do. I mean, people have gone to jail for election fraud. Mm-hmm. I think it's happened in South Florida. There was, I think, Broward County, the election person there was so bad, so egregious that they actually ended up in jail because election fraud is a felony, as far as I know. But the thing is, we need to do. I think you're onto something here. We need to sort of out these people as election traitors. We need some really nasty name for them, because the left is always good at branding, people on conservatives, Americans, patriots, independents, as right wing extremists, white supremacists, et cetera, white nationalists, whatever that means, and so all these different names are out there. So we should, let's play in their ballpark for a while. Let's be as nasty as they are and not be afraid to really fight this. And so, the jail terms need to be enforced. And I don't care if you're the lowliest, worker down there. If you didn't report fraud that you saw, you're as bad as the person that did it. If you're right there in the office next to somebody who's putting fraudulent ballots in and you didn't say something, those folks need to go to jail too. I think that would encourage a lot of compliance with the election. But I'm still worried. Here's a question for you. I'm still worried that 2022 is going to be meaningless unless we get these audits done before then. What do you think?
Absolutely. If we don't get these audits done and follow through with the outcome, the elite in this country are so used to getting away with this stuff. Even if we do the audit and we expose the fraud and then nothing comes up, there's nothing that's going to stop them from doing it in the future. And, this goes all the way back to before the founding of our country. If you look at James Otis Jr. and Jefferson and Adams and all those guys, they would hold mock hangings of politicians who did these types of things in the street. They would build gallows and mock executions in the street. They would protest them at their homes. I mean, neither one of us advocate violence in any way, but to make these people uncomfortable for what they're doing.
Yeah, no, and I think we can talk about that too. Well, I'll tell you something that I was broached last night. It's going to knock you up, but the idea of hanging somebody in effigy, are you trying to kill them? No, but they're saying they're so evil. What they're doing is so bad that, not the death penalty for them personally, but the death of what they're doing. So I think there's a great symbology. Is that a word? But there's a great symbolism. Oh, there are symbolism. There we go. But there's tremendous value in that. And we should look more into the founding, because people think that, our debates are so uncivil. The political discourse has degenerated to such a low state. You want to see how they talk to each other back in the founding. I mean, they're openly insulting. Your mother was a pig. Your father smelled of elderberries. And it just gets going from there, right? And it's a little Monty Python I'm channeling. But the point is, they were rough. Politics was rough. The Douglas-Lincoln debates, which I'm not that familiar with yet, but I think I'll get there, they really attacked each other. The congressional debates, they were practically dueling. In fact, Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr did get into a duel in which Alexander Hamilton got killed. That's the extreme of politics that we don't even see today. And I sort of wonder if dueling wouldn't be a bad thing to bring back. You see McConnell and Schumer out there with sabers? In some ways, we're almost too simple. Everything's computerized, sanitized. Media is all the rough around the edges. You can't say this, you can't say that. They're even dropping the language of illegal aliens, something I use all the time. But tell me, because I bet you know about this stuff too. How bad, how rough, how what kind of fistfights did they have in Congress back in the early days when men were men and, weren't metrosexualized? Is that a word? I have to use that more often. Metrosexualized. What do you think? Anyway, go ahead. Let me throw it back to you.
You definitely turned it into a verb. They were really rough. They didn't mix words. They said exactly what they meant. There was a lot less of a political theater. I think we need to get back to that. We're so worried about everybody's feelings and who we're hurting, and then we dance all the way around the truth. It's just another weapon that the elite use. And I don't even like to say right and left, because right now everybody in Washington is on the same team, regardless as to whether they have an R or a D in front of their name.
It's them and us. It's globalists versus individualists. It's those that want control and those that want to be left alone. That's always been the debate. I'll publish something that I wrote a long time, about 20 years ago, for California when I was working on a campaign for open carry. And so, basically talking about our rights as unalienable. I'll post that for you in a little bit. I'm getting a little background noise. You know, I'm not sure what's going on where you are. Sounds like a truck horn in the distance or something. Anyway, there we go. Yeah, that happens. Background noise. So, you know, if you have cats meowing in the phone, we're going to hear that. Kids got it crazy that way. Speaking of political violence, I wrote something. I shouldn't post on Facebook at 1 o'clock in the morning because it's not a good idea. But I put a posting on there just for the fun of it, just to bring it up. I said, what if being an illegal alien carried a death penalty? You know, in other words, if you come to this country, you know, and I've sort of modified my views, you know, as I've woken up and sort of, you know, decided the impracticality of it all. But what if, you know, being an illegal, California used to have a three strikes, you're outlawed. I don't know if they still do. But the three strikes was you commit three major felonies, you're done. You're in jail for the rest of your life. And I was just thinking to myself, and I would say exactly what I wrote, should being an illegal alien carry the death penalty? If they were in uniform, they would be an invading army and we'd be at war. So I'm drawing the out now. Do I really think that illegal aliens should get the death penalty? Well, depending on the crime. But I'm just saying, if they, I'm doing this more as a symbolic kind of thing, right? We're talking about earlier. So in other words, if illegal aliens were uniformed soldiers, you know, they would be invasion and we would be at war and they would have the death penalty because we'd be shooting them as enemy soldiers. But we don't think of them that way. We think of them as just people crossing the line who want a better life, much like bank robbers, drug dealers, and other folks who want a better life, you know, who commit crimes. But what do you think of that? Just to kind of play with that idea for a bit. At least we'll do something.
I think it's a valid point. At least if we had a heightened penalty standard for illegal immigrants. So if theft is, you know, 364 days in county jail, if you're an illegal immigrant, then it's a minimum of 5 years, something to that standard. So it's more of an elevated penalty if you're here illegally. And then, you know, if you commit murders, it's automatic death penalty. I can see that.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting. People have challenged me on this all the time, and of course they never win the argument when I say that illegal aliens have no rights. And I would caution you to try and use the term illegal alien over illegal immigrant. And that's part of the psychology. If the left, and they do this all the time, if the left blurs the distinction between illegal alien and lawful immigrant and calls everybody an immigrant, you'll hear sayings like, you know, regardless of immigration status, to which I respond, well, I say, oh, good, I thought you were talking about illegal aliens, because illegal aliens have no immigration status because they're not immigrants. Immigrants are lawful people who filled out an application, you know, to come to the United States. They were approved. They came here. They got a green card. They're working their way towards citizenship. That is what an immigrant is. What an illegal alien is, somebody across the border illegally. And I don't care if the Biden insurrection aided them or not. That's not the issue, because they're aiding and abetting felonies. So which brought me to my next thing is that if you have a death penalty for illegal aliens, whether you enforce it or not, but if you have a death penalty for illegal aliens, then anybody who gives aid and comfort to illegal aliens becomes a traitor, which also carries the death penalty in times of war if you declare illegal aliens as an enemy combatant force and illegal aliens individually as enemy combatants. And that would get rid of all the sanctuary cities and everything else. You're saying, wait a minute, you know, you are now a traitor to the United States if you give aid and comfort to this invading army that's non-uniformed. Because the non-uniform, they can be shot as spies. If we actually declare war on illegal aliens. I mean, these are interesting concepts to play with. I'm just trying to scare the hell out of people who are here illegally so they'll leave. That's the main goal here. But I think we should start talking about that and, you know, see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem is there wouldn't be the as much of a problem with illegal immigration if the administration wasn't encouraging it. You saw the influx from the Trump administration to the Biden administration. So security borders is one of the allocated authorities of the federal government. And I know they don't really like the Constitution that much, but that's one of the things that they are supposed to be doing. And it's one of the things they consistently fail on.
Well, here's a question for you, too. Is, you know, considering that these folks are illegal aliens, they're not immigrants to me. This is not an immigration policy. This is not an open border policy. This is an open invasion. It's almost like they hired illegal aliens as mercenaries to be placed strategically in our country to overturn the votes. know, so they are there for vote suppression. They are there at, basically, I believe this is tyranny, you know, on the part of the Biden insurrection, because it's not administration. And people, you know, I keep saying this, you know, if you have an unlawful administration that's still under an ongoing investigation, which they are, you know, you have to expect them to do unlawful things. So the idea that they're actually bringing in a, you know, mercenary army, and I would start to call illegal aliens mercenaries. They're basically being hired by the Biden insurrection, by an illegal government, to strategically overthrow our elections in places, you know, which are predominantly, you know, American voters. And I say American versus Marxist, because you can't be Marxist and support the Constitution. You can't be Marxist and pledge allegiance to the flag. You know, it's an extreme, you know, political situation that denies the existence of a state of private property, of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Therefore, you can't be both. You can't be a globalist and be an American. It doesn't, I mean, physically, yes, you can. If you're born here, you know, to legal parents, yes, you're an American. But what I'm saying is, spiritually, ideologically, principally, and by everything else, by simply, you know, any measure you can think of, these folks are not Americans. They're not advocating for our country. And the illegal alien mercenary army that they are hiring to change our country's demographics, that's treason. That's not an immigration policy.
Absolutely. And it's also, there are certain circles that refer to that as fifth column forces.
Define fifth column. I've heard that, but I've never really understood what that meant.
It's very in depth, but they go a little bit beyond election fraud and are these people being, because you know the majority of them are military age males, mm-hmm. regardless as to the pictures that they show on CNN of pregnant women at the border. That's not predominantly what's coming over. So they could be easily used as a military force or a guerrilla force.
It'd be interesting if illegal aliens get organized into groups, you know, like Antifa and Black Lives Matter and other Marxist insurrectionist groups. They'd be the perfect army to use because they don't have any stake in this country. They're not, you know, the laws and the prosecutions would be very different. And they probably try and extend like they did for the Gitmo people that when they tried them in New York. You know, they said, well, you bring them to New York, you know, they have constitutional rights. No, they don't. If you're an enemy combatant, you don't have constitutional rights. And this would be something that the conservatives should make a whole lot more clear. So, look, these people don't have any constitutional rights. You can't have rights in a place you're not allowed to be in. It is fundamentally irrational to think that anybody who is here illegally has any rights whatsoever because they're here illegally. That cancels the ability to have lawful constitutional rights when you're in a place you can't be in. And if you can't be in it, you certainly can't have rights in it. That's intellectually impossible. So all these things I think are, you know, I'm just kind of on a roll this morning on language, but language I think is critical. And if we can start using these different terms, I think we'll express this a whole lot more differently. Anyway, let me get a comment on that and let's find out what Santa Rosa Volunteers is doing. Uh-oh. Is that your phone?
Nope. That's the other one.
Yeah. Turn the phone off. How many phones you got? you're a busy man.
But, yeah, I'm the same way, and the Constitution really outlines who has rights. And if you look at the 14th Amendment, you know, we expanded on who had rights. So even if you look into all the social justice stuff, these people who identify as transgender or any of the other, 200 genders that there are, they don't have the right to vote. The Constitution grants the right to vote to men and women, United States citizens. So why is it that all of these people just get to vote all of a sudden and we're not allowed to question them?
Well, see, I would question you on transgender because if people are legitimately transgender, they you know, they were actually born, you know, with a genetic, I'm not sure what the word is because I'm not that familiar with it. It's such a small percentage of the population. But if you are genuinely transgender, in other words, you have, you know, you're part male, part female, there's something, and it requires surgery and things to you know, to make a decision as to what you are physically, that's different. But I think they're still born with either an X chromosome, an extra X or an extra Y, one or the other. But biologically, but the idea that just because you dress differently, you dress as the opposite sex, you know, that makes you somehow a different person is ludicrous. That's insanity. That's the left's irrationality. And there are two sexes, and they're not genders. Gender is what happens in literature, okay? You know, like in different languages like Spanish, you know, has you know, L and La for different, you know, because everything is either masculine or feminine in Spanish. I think French is the same thing, la and le, you know. So they assign gender. That's gender. Okay, that's where gender comes from. Sex is what you are born. You're born male or you're born female. Unfortunately, things don't always work out as we would like, you know, biologically. And that's a different thing. But those are the people who I consider transgender. Everybody else is transsexual. You know, they're just, you know, they're acting, dressing, you know, taking on a role of something else. But that's a mental thing. That's not a physical thing. So what we need to do is separate out physical transgenders, genuine transgenders, and people that are just, you know, living out their fantasies, which is fine, but don't live out your fantasy. But that doesn't give you the right to impinge on anybody else's rights. You know, Andrew Napolitano's article, we talked about this yesterday. No one has the right to take away somebody else's rights. No one has the right to pressure anybody else, you know, or guilt anybody else, or legally remove anybody else's rights to exercise what they think are their own rights. It doesn't work that way. So I would caution on that, simply because there are genuine transgender folks that need help, and more power to them. I say definitely help them out. But to use that as a political agenda, to then say that, you know, a guy wants to be a woman, dresses as a woman, still a guy, walks into a ladies' room. No, you have no right to do that any more than these. Well, did you watch the Olympics? Because the weightlifting disgusted me. I had to turn it off simply because of the men who were acting as women, and they may have had surgery. Okay, but the basic biology was they were born male, you know, in all respects, physically and genetically. To have them in the Olympics to me was disgusting. Is the one thing that turned me off the entire Olympics. Did you get a chance to see that? Because it was really kind of cool.
I haven't watched the Olympics in some time, and this year certainly hasn't changed my mind.
Mm. See, I find it fascinating. And it was a great show. I mean, the athletes I thought were amazing, and the fact that they had to wait a year to do this. But it's interesting how we all get together and compete against each other. Everybody's shaking hands and hugging and having a great time, and the medals are out there. And then we go back to politics as usual. It's like in World War I, you know, where the soldiers, you know, they took Christmas Day off, and the Germans and the British, you know, had Christmas dinner together, and the next day they went back to killing each other. What am I missing here? It's a strange world. Well, tell me about the 14th Amendment. So I think the transgender thing is not an argument that's going to go too far, but I think you're absolutely right. Especially if I've used this part before too, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. That means not subject to the jurisdiction of another country. Okay. So if you're naturalized and born in another country, you're not subject to U.S. jurisdiction, citizenship jurisdiction, not geographical. People tend to forget that. Anyway, if you're born or naturalized in the United States, you're a citizen of the United States. And here's the key phrase, and of the state wherein they reside. So what I've done is said, okay, well, if you're a United States citizen, you know, lawful United States citizen, and you're living in Florida, you're also a citizen of the state of Florida. However, if you're not a U.S. citizen, if you're in the country illegally, you're also illegally in the state in which you reside and can be removed by pretty much any means necessary because you have no right to be there. So the states... So this concept is something that maybe we can work on with Santa Rosa Volunteers, the idea of state citizenship for Florida. And we say, look, 14th Amendment says if you're a citizen of the United States and you're living in Florida, that's cool. You know, United States citizens can come and go as they please. But if you're not a U.S. citizen, if you're not here legally, if you're an illegal alien, you are not and can never be a citizen of the state of Florida. And therefore, you are persona non grata. And we can do whatever we want, seize all your assets. You know, take your stuff, take your businesses, take your bank accounts, take your credit cards, take your car, and, you know, kick you the hell out of school and get you the hell out of Florida, make it impossible for them to live here. That's really where I think the forefront of dealing with this Biden mercenary army is at the state level and state citizenship. How's that for a concept?
Oh, absolutely. We have to give the states the power back. People have forgotten that the states created the federal government and therefore are superior to. We have to empower the states and look, if California can dictate that they're sanctuary cities and they're a sanctuary state, then why can't the cities in Florida say that we're not and we'll export all illegal immigrants or illegal aliens in our state?
Well, we could do that with our county. It'd be an interesting thing to do. I mean, we are the center of citizen legislation basically for the world. you know, I mean, let's face it, this is it, you know, Action Radio and all the folks involved here and Santa Rosa Volunteers and everybody else and all the, you know, the reporters and everybody around the country. But the center of citizen legislation is right here. So if we could, if you want to write this too, feel free. And we can work on this, that Santa Rosa declare itself an illegal alien free zone. You know, that would be something for us to do, just as, you know, I remember Berkeley declared themselves a nuclear-free zone. We're not going to use any nuclear power. We're not going to have any nuclear anything here. We're not, you know, of course, the Lawrence Livermore Lab, you know, where half the city of Berkeley worked was like 20 miles away. But they were non-nuclear. They declared themselves a nuclear-free town. And the whole idea of sanctuary cities. And my idea is I actually came up with Second Amendment sanctuary zones back in 2016 when I wrote the article, you know, based on something I read and I credited the guy that said, hey, why don't we, do something like that. I said, okay, well, let me create one. Let's see what happens. And so this, you know, these things came about. But we could be in the legal alien free zone.
Yeah, actually,
I'm
going to pitch that one to the county commissioners, the board.
Yeah, there you go. See the good work we do here. See, folks who are joining us, especially our newer folks, Lithuania just joined the Action Radio International family. You know, we don't just talk here. When I talk about, you know, proposing a bill, you know, that bill, a lot of times, you know, will get written. And we will, in fact, I should send you my Second Amendment sanctuary, the real one, not the wishy-washy whereas thing that went around. But we need to have some kind of, we could declare ourselves an open carry county. You know, there's a lot of things that we could do that would lead the state to a better place, simply because we've got the conservatives here, we've got the veterans, we've got the, you know, genuine Americans, the independents, we've got the people here to do it. You know, so let's do it. Let me put that down my list of things here. So we got state citizens, and we've got illegal alien free zone. Or do we have a better term for what else? What should we call it? No, that's not too bad. Illegal alien free zone. We should talk about something else. We're at a meeting. I'm not going to tell folks which one, but it was a Republican meeting. I'm not going to go into too many details of who was there because there's still some things in dispute. But we raised the idea of figuring out how many illegal aliens were in our Santa Rosa County school system. That is another thing that we should do too, because if this border is open to mercenaries flooding in with their kids, you know, do we have to educate them? And there's a Supreme Court decision, Plyler v. Doe, where the Supreme Court did something they didn't have the authority to do, which is order taxpayers around the country to fund the education of people that can't be here. You know, they can't order you to fund an illegal activity. All right, so the idea that people are actually going along with this is insane. They can't do it. You know, and so that's something that needs to be challenged too. So that'd be another great thing is that we have to deny funding on principle that you cannot be required to fund an illegal activity, and you certainly can't be required to pay foreign aid, because that's what it is. If you're paying for illegal aliens in our schools, that's foreign aid. What do you think? You want to bring that up to the county commissioners too?
Absolutely. I'd love to be able to find a way to determine how many illegals are in our school system. I was actually just kind of tossing that around in my head, seeing logistically how that would happen, especially with our current superintendent and board trying to run blocker for him.
Exactly.
Definitely.
Anybody can look up those folks if you really want to, you know, figure it out, but it's not that hard to do. But here's the thing, though. The time to do that was before the school year started. Now, school year's already started. You know, the time to do it would be at the Christmas break and say, okay, we're gonna everybody, you know, re-register at Christmas, and we're going to ask you your citizenship. You know, and if the superintendent says, well, the objects to that, saying they can't do that, and we'll say, well, how can you not do that? How can you force American citizens and lawful, you know, green card permanent residents, because they're paying taxes too, right? How can you force these people, you know, how can you force all of us to pay for a criminal activity? And you know, people don't think about it. They say, well, the kids need an education. Well, of course they do, in their home country, you know, paid for by their fellow citizens, not us. I don't think – well, here's a way to look at it. See, look up if you can force Americans to contribute to foreign aid. That's how I would do it. I would approach it on the foreign aid angle and on funding the Supreme Court making any policy, which, of course, they can't do that either, but the Supreme Court making a policy requiring American taxpayers to fund an illegal activity. I would use those two things. See, this is great. We've got this whole army of people. we've got Santa Rosa Volunteers. We've got this wonderful group, and this is critical. What you and I are doing is critical, because as much as we can generate the ideas here at Action Radio, that's our strength. There really is, and people calling in and working on bills and things like that. We don't have, you know, the volunteers, the ground forces, the folks that go to the meetings, that show up with the signs, that wear the yellow shirts, that carry out the other half of the operation, which is the actual advocacy. And so it's critical for us to work together on these things, so the ideas that you and I generate here get followed through. And then you can come back next week and say, hey, guess what, Greg? Here's what happened. You know, that's going to be fabulous, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. And on that front, so we got today is Walkout Wednesday.
Okay.
Hopefully everybody will participate. And so Chris Ann Hall, I believe, was kind of the brainchild of this, or this was her brainchild, I guess. But so everybody is encouraged at noon to walk out in solidarity, with the forced vaccine mandates. So, and whether your company is forcing the vaccine mandates or it's not, if you just take a few minutes, find a major highway, if you have a sign, if you don't, just support this effort. This afternoon, between 4 and 6, I believe there's going to be some demonstrators over in front of Ascension Sacred Heart, like last week, because they have already announced their vaccine mandate. And it appears that we don't have the numbers. I know a lot of people that I talk to get discouraged. You know, if only a couple hundred people show up, and you know, you see like Berlin where there's millions of people in the street. This is happening in America all over the place. It's small groups everywhere. But anybody that's listening, you're not alone. These people are out there. We are out there. For some reason, we don't have either the courage or the will here in America to actually get out there and show your face. And I think a lot of that is social media. They kind of beat you down and make you think that you're alone or you're the minority. We're not. And the people out there aren't necessarily protesting the vaccine itself. It's the mandate. They don't want to be forced to do something. Whether the vaccine is positive or negative is an entirely different argument. But you can't force somebody to be a guinea pig in an experiment from the government. And that's exactly what's happening. So we'll be out there this afternoon between 4 and 6 in front of Sacred Heart, letting them know that that's not acceptable. Last week they did waffle. So it seems when you're fighting these big companies that you don't have a whole lot of power. Well, it went from these vaccines are mandatory, and if you don't get your vaccine by a certain date, you're terminated, to we're going to negotiate with regard to exemptions or collective bargaining agreements, blah, blah, blah. So they have already shown a weakness. And if we keep pressure on them, they'll back off of this vaccine mandate altogether. But it's going to take constant work and relentlessness.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to find out what's behind a lot of this, because I'm convinced it's money. You know, there was money for recording a COVID death. There was more money for putting somebody on a ventilator, even though 90% of the people put on ventilators died. So there's money in death. There's money in disease. There's money, you know, we're not preventing. We're trying, and we're not even curing. This is the first disease where the cure was illegal, you know. And as far as these vaccines go, yeah, if anybody wants, I would never stop somebody from getting a vaccine. I would try and convince them not to. But it would be just as illegal to mandate that nobody get one as it would be to mandate that everybody get one. You can't do that.
Right.
We're not a country of mandates. I think Europe's an interesting situation. I think in South America, where they protest like crazy too, and different places around the world, even in Iran, you know, people protest in Iran, they hit the streets because I don't think they have any other options. I think one of the things that's unique about us that is to our advantage is that we do have other options. You know, you're not going to find Action Radio in any other country. You're not going to find citizen legislators in any other country. Most people are so controlled because they don't have a culture of individual rights. They act as a group because a group is the only way they have any power. Whereas here we have individuals who can act, you know, we can act collectively, we can act together, we can get behind the bill, we can get behind different things. But I think because of the United States and the unique situation we have for now, you know, I think we have more options. And one of those options is to write bills, you know, that we can introduce into the legislation as a counter to all the other stuff that the Soroses are bringing in, the big companies are bringing in, you know, the wacko environmental groups and different other wacko groups, the foundations with all their money, you know. So there are options here. And for Sacred Heart, if they're willing to negotiate and finally back off this, let them. You know, I'm a firm believer in the result, not the method. And so the conflict is like the last resort. You know, old Bruce Lee movies, okay? You know, be the river, not the rock. You know, because most people like to conflict and bash head on. What happens to rocks when they collide? They break, okay? Nobody wins. But a river, go around, bend, twist, you know, form to the environment, you know, be slippery, you know, just find your way through. You know, it's a very different philosophy. And so at Action Radio is much more river than the rock, because the rock gets worn down eventually. You know, it's strong and it stays in the ground, but it didn't go anywhere, you know, and it gets worn down. River's eternal. Rivers can dry up, reform, change course, do all kinds of different things. And that's how I look at lobbying. That's how I look at legislation. It's a very fluid process. So if they are willing to back off, let's let them. Let's encourage them. Say, hey, great. You know, we're buddies now. We're pals. We're on the same side. This is wonderful. You know, we're interested in health. You know, but Tucker Carlson raised a question last night that I've been asking for a long time too. And that is, has anybody noticed the fact that it is the health professions, the people that do this for a living, that are objecting to the vaccine? What does that tell you? I know what it tells me. Something wrong here.
Oh, absolutely. And I know quite a few people in that profession. And nobody that I've come to contact with wants or wanted to take it. I do know people that have. And everyone can state that there were adverse effects. Now, to your question on the money, because that was bothering me as well, I think I found, I don't have any documents yet, but so the hospitals were told, unless they have their staff fully vaccinated, that they would not be able to bill Medicaid or Medicare.
So oh, really? Oh, that needs to come out. Oh, yeah. No, that's huge. That's motive right there. So, and this is the Biden insurrection, so that they can sell more vaccines, and so Dr. Fascist can, you know, make more money on top of the billions he's already squandered away at, you know, I don't know this for sure, but I'm just betting. I'm guessing that he has, with his 1,000 patents, has squandered away billions of dollars in offshore accounts. That would be my guess. All right. So you're saying Medicare. Hospitals could not, which is huge, because a lot of people don't care. You know, anybody over 65, which I will be at in a few years, right? So anybody over 65 who's on Medicare, they're saying that the hospitals can't bill Medicare unless all their staff is vaccinated. That's tyranny. that's the worst of corporatism, the worst of the fascist amalgamation of business and government into a single entity for the exploitation of the people. Because the government can enforce people buying a product from business. And that's what's going on now. And in fact, they're making us pay for a product that we don't want through our taxes that is infecting the population. Can you get me anything on that? That's good. I think you're on. Where did you hear that?
That came from inside the hospital, and I'm currently waiting on the documents.
We don't need names on this.
Then I'll release it.
See, that would make sense. See, I was trying to think why they were doing this, because, you know, they can't function with half their staff if half their staff leaves. They can't do it. In fact, I got a bunch of stories on the airlines, but today's the title of the show, Remember When Airlines Were Fun and Fights Were at Hockey Games. You know, I remember when I was a kid, that was pretty much, airlines were fun. Listen, you went flying in the 80s, it was a picnic. It was a party. You've been flying in the 70s, you know, there was an airline, PSA, out in California. It was a domestic California airline because there's enough people in California. California is as big as most countries, right? So they had their own airline, PSA, Pacific Southern Airlines. And the flight attendants were called stewardesses then. And they were up and down the aisle in the hot pants. I mean, it was sex in the air. It was fun. You know, I was like a kid. I still thought, like, wow, this is great. They look, you know, I still recognize, you know, babes when I was five, right? But yeah. Yeah, airlines were fun, and it was a good time. You know, fly the friendly skies, and now it's horrible. It's gone from cattle call to to basically, you know, pro wrestling. It's a really scary situation, but it used to be fun.
And these are the small incremental changes that guys like you and I have fought for several decades. So after 9/11 is when the airlines started implementing all that stuff, and the whole thing changed. And they used it under the oh, well, we got to keep you safe. We got to keep you safe, which is the exact same argument they're using now. During the Obama administration, when we were advocating against Obamacare, all of this language was in Obamacare that gave them the power to do what they're doing to the hospitals. So all of this stuff is little drops in the bucket that they've been doing over a long period of time that we've been trying to fight. And nobody really saw the danger in. It's like, oh, well, that would never happen in the U.S. No, you're just a conspiracy theorist. And, well, now we're seeing all of that come to fruition, and now people are angry about it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, and I've said this before, that was my first revelation upon coming to this country, because I was born in Canada, spent a few years in Australia, and came here as a teenager, was that the government was huge, and the government was everywhere. And I thought, oh, my God, this is, you know, because in Canada, the government's not that big. I mean, you hear about it in Ottawa, you know, and I was a kid then. So I remember the, you know, went to the 1967 100th anniversary of Canada, and we had the big, you know, Canadian National Fair in Montreal. It was really fun, you know, but it wasn't huge like some of the other things that go on here. Australia, same thing. Australia at that point had about 20-some-odd million people. It wasn't that big a country. This is back in the 60s and early 70s. And the government just wasn't that big. You know, they had two aircraft carriers. You know, and they couldn't afford, you know, I think they sold one because they couldn't afford them both. You know, they had like 24 Phantoms, you know, jets. That was the Air Force. That was the majority Australian Air Force. You know, they just didn't have the money. And I came to this country when I saw the size of the military. And I lived not too far from when I was living in Massachusetts, Hanscom Air Force Base. Massive 12,000-foot runways for B-52s. That's what it was for. I mean, they supplied Vietnam out of this place because all the high technology, the Raytheons, the Digitals, all these different companies were around there. And it was just a massive military complex. And I looked at the size of the U.S. government and went, oh, my God. You know, and the fact that they could wage a war over in a place called Vietnam that I didn't really know much about until I got here. I said, where's that? I said, we're fighting there? For what? You know, what kind of country my parents brought me to, right? So I'm looking around. But the first thing I realized is, because I've always believed, because a lot of things have happened to me in my life. And I'm not the only one, but, you know, there are folks where a lot of things have happened to them. And you realize very quickly that those things that you think can't happen to you can happen to you and did happen to me. And so I'm like, okay, well, if it can happen to me, you know, anything can happen to me that can happen to anybody else. Anything that can happen to the place I'm living in can happen to any other place where it's lived in. So we study World War II in Australia because the Japanese were there in northern Australia. You know, it was only 20-some-odd years, you know, when I got there that the World War II had ended. Okay, so still fresh in a lot of people's mind. A lot of parents were in the war, or certainly grandparents were in the war. You know, and so it was very interesting, you know, idea, this whole idea of war. You know, and I studied Britain and what happened to them and the Blitz and everything else. So war became very real as to what happened. And I looked at us and I thought, wait a minute, how can we be so untouched by this war? Is it real? And I thought, well, if you've got a government big enough to wage a war and keep everything here looking like there is no war, that's a pretty powerful government. And so, and I looked at, you know, Germany, and the first thing the Germans said was, well, we didn't think it could happen here. And, you know, and of course everybody else, you know, in Japan, well, we didn't think the emperor was going to do that. And China, well, you know, we were happy with Chiang Kai-shek, the nationals, you know, we didn't think it would happen here. In Russia, same thing. Well, Russia was a different case because they went from czars to communism. There really wasn't much different from a tyrannical monarch to a tyrannical communist. But the first thing, making of the story probably longer than it needs to be, but I realized very quickly that anything could happen here that happened anywhere else. And the size of the U.S. government alone made it very possible that any government that big could do pretty much whatever they wanted, you know, if, you know, once people weren't, you know, if people were directed towards, you know, a totalitarian direction. Maybe I was the only one that thought that way. I've always realized that this country was going to, you know, I thought it was going to be next, and I hate being right. I mean, I really do, but it looks like, you know, things that nobody thought was possible. I immediately realized back in the 70s, you know, just seeing the size of the government alone. And yes, anything that can happen somewhere else can happen here. Don't think you're, you know, we're not an isolated little island here. And that's something else you learn from living in different countries and traveling. And you realize that people aren't that different and governments aren't that different. And you can talk about individual rights, you know, as long as you want, but unless they're enforced, you know, with the same vigor that we talk about them, you know, the government will take them away, even though the Constitution says they can't. Those are just words on paper. They require people. The Constitution only is as powerful as the people, you know, demand it be, and that we enforce it upon government to limit them. And that's a problem, too.
That's kind of the biggest point that anybody can make, is the Constitution is only as powerful as we make it. We have to hold their feet to the fire. And for me, one of the biggest lies that everybody's been told is how they focus on the federal government, the presidency. Mm-hmm. You know, the president's the most powerful man on the planet. And so everybody focuses on these federal elections, and they mm-hmm. ignore their local politics. They ignore their county commissions and their city, unless they specifically have a problem. You know, if their backyard floods, they go down and complain to the county or the city. But you know, they don't know who their politicians are that they vote for. I know just about everybody that I talk to, when I poll people, they just circle bubbles if they're Republican or Democrat, whatever party they affiliate with. They just fill in the bubble when they vote, and then they look for the president and the vice president and whoever else that is on their federal ticket. So the local elections are kind of an afterthought. We really have to change that. You have much more power locally than you do federally.
I think that's changing. I think, you know, and the work you're doing with Santa Rosa Volunteers is absolutely critical, because you are changing. You're working, you know, with these school boards, with members of the public, you know, so you're forming a bigger group. And the bigger that group gets, the more influence you can have. And so, you know, peacefully working with them. But it really comes down to nuts and bolts of legislation. And I think the biggest change that we can bring about, you and I, here in this county and in the city of Milton, is the idea that, you know, not only we're not just going to complain about what they're doing, we're going to give them the alternative. See, this is the part that's been missing all along. You know, the part that citizens should be writing legislation, that you could write a county ordinance, you know. And here's something I just thought of, too, as you're talking. I got Josie on the line. I'll get to her in a second. But the idea that if we cross-referenced, you know, kids in school with the voter registration rolls, for example, okay? I don't know if you can do that legally, but people who are registered to vote, when I registered to vote when I moved here, I had to bring my passport. I had to prove my citizenship, which is a good thing. That's the way it's supposed to be. Same thing with my driver's license, too. You know, they want to know if I was a U.S. citizen. Okay. And I said, great, no problem. Citizenship is public knowledge. It's not a private thing. It's not a private status. It's not like your Social Security number. Okay, for example. But when you leave or enter the United States, you have to declare your citizenship, and you declare it publicly in front of a government official. Who are you? So citizenship status is not private. Okay. You could use that. And I think it'd be interesting to see if you can cross-reference the voter rolls and see parents that have kids in school, if they're registered to vote, you know, they're American citizens. I think that would be a fair assumption, you know, unless they're registered fraudulently, and that's a different story, you know. But it wouldn't be a bad thing to either next year or this Christmas have parents, you know, over the Christmas holiday, you know, re-register and do a citizenship check at that time. That might be something interesting to push for. And, of course, Americans aren't going to care. So, I'll come down. Sure, no problem. Yeah. That might be something interesting to explore. What do you think?
Yeah, let's talk off air on that one. I'd like to get your ideas on logistically how we should go about that, and then I'll definitely bring it to the school board.
I don't know how to do it. I just thought of it. This is a laboratory, folks. This is, you know, again, we deal in the future. We deal in what can be done. I don't care what has been done. You know, that's not my concern, unless it directly affects what can be done. Josie, welcome to the program. You're on with David Jones, who is co-founder of Santa Rosa Volunteers and our great sponsor here for the show. Josie?
Yes, good morning. I listened a little bit already of your conversation. I want to thank you so much for standing and to go in front of that hospital, because they're killing innocent people. And a lot of nurses are telling me a lot of stuff that is going on in that hospital, West Florida and Baptist Hospital. All the hospitals are dangerous. So I urge people to stay away from any hospitals. And if you can take care of COVID at home, stay at home. I hear so much stories, and it's not good. And we need to be trusting our hospitals and doctors, and we're at the point that we cannot do that at the moment. And I'm very disappointed with our leaders in our country, our governor, our mayors. Nobody's doing anything. At least they can come out and say, hey, you can do this and this and this and that to prevent COVID or take this kind of medicine. They're not doing anything at all. They want you to get sick. And I'm sick of all this COVID pandemic that they did in this country. But I want to thank you, and I wish Saturday when I'm off after 4 o'clock, because I'll be
there
for sure.
What's going on Saturday?
I say I wish they had the protest on Saturday when I'm off.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, the problem with 4 to 6 is a lot of people are still working them. But Josie raised a great point, but I want to kind of clarify.
Yeah.
When you say that the hospitals are dangerous, I want to make sure that we're talking about why
they
exactly. So are you talking about because of people who are getting treated for COVID badly or because people are vaccinated?
What specifically
do you mean?
They're not giving the hydrochloroquine to the patients. They're not allowed. They're not allowed to give the hydrochloroquine, and that's exactly what's curing the COVID. They're giving them antibiotics. A lot of people coming right now, they're giving them blood thinners. I mean, they're doing everything else besides taking the COVID away from people, and we know exactly what cures COVID, hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah.
It's one of the best medicines.
And that's why I wanted to clarify that, because, you know, we're talking about the treatments for COVID, which are government mandated to not work. That's the problem there. But, most other things that hospitals do. But a lot of folks are staying away from hospitals. Like I have a test that I have to do, like everybody has to do, at a certain point. I'm holding off until this is settled. I'm thinking, I'm not going to go get, and this may be an irrational fear. I don't know. But, if you get put under in a hospital, if you're knocked out, who's to say they're not going to give you a vaccine in secret and not tell you about it? I don't know if anybody's ever heard of a case like that. I think it would be the most unethical thing in the world, and it'd be criminal. But once they do it, you can't reverse it. So I'm thinking to myself, is anybody who's going in for a regular procedure, getting vaccinated anyway? So, by the way, we vaccinated you for free. You're okay. You're all set now. Has anybody heard of anything like that? That might be keeping people away in the hospital, keeping me away,
I heard of the abortion clinic that they were going to start vaccinating women while they were asleep getting the abortion done.
This is something that could happen. Okay. Or is it happening? Do you know of a case where that's happened? Someone got a vaccine while they were out?
I don't know. I really don't know, but I heard that they were going to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, as long as they aren't doing it, then we might want to talk about that. David, I should get you two together off the air because Josie knows a ton of stuff about hospitals. She works with hospital people all the time in her business.
Yes.
David, what do you think? What do you think about the hospitals in general?
I haven't heard of anybody being vaccinated while they were out. That would certainly be one of my fears as well. I know at least one of the local hospitals here in Santa Rosa County is using ivermectin to treat patients and has been for a while. And the problem I have right now, in the last year when ivermectin first came out and they started using it in this hospital, they were getting about a 3 to 5 day recovery time on their patients, right? And it was nearly 100% effective, like we've all heard several times.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever this new illness is that they are calling the Delta variant, the ivermectin doesn't seem to be as effective. People in the hospital right now that have been in there for nearly 2 weeks that have been treated with the ivermectin, zinc. They're not using hydroxychloroquine, but the same treatment that was effective several months ago is not effective now. So I don't know what this new variant or illness or what this biological agent is. But the ivermectin is not effective against it nearly as much as it was against the original SARS-CoV-2.
The original SARS-CoV-2 is gone. It died out a year ago. You're getting now. Just to let you know, I picked up my quercetin, my vitamin D, my vitamin C, my zinc, and I was getting, lower amounts of that, but I've greatly increased them, mostly because of the vaccinated. I don't want the spike proteins. I don't want the danger of the spike proteins, and the idea that, everybody else, it's interesting that Josie says about the blood thinners. And that was the first thing I thought. If you're getting blood clots, would blood thinners help the problem? And Judy Mikovits said very clearly, no, they give you cancer and they cause your chest to fill with fluid and they do all kinds of horrible things. So blood thinners aren't the answer to blood clots. The answer is the same things we know true. Hydroxychloroquine, D3C, boost your immune system, zinc. Zinc kills viruses. Zinc, I went to a pharmacy, you know, yesterday. It was, I'm not going to mention their name either. But just, you know, unless they come on the show, which I've asked them to do. But zinc, apparently, you know, zinc lozenges will destroy all the viruses in your throat and nose and everywhere else, because it's the zinc that coats, you know, the entrance pathway for viruses, which is your mouth and nose. And so zinc lozenges are a great thing, you know, as a preventive, because you're automatically, I don't know how long the protection lasts, but the zinc in your system also lasts too. So if you get enough zinc, you know, in a lozenge that dissolves slowly and basically, you know, coats the pathway of viruses, those are things you can do. You know, I don't know how you stop the spike proteins other than the hydroxychloroquine, which is, I think, you know, going to affect the virus in a way that's, you know, you're not going to get – the worst thing, of course, is the – I'm getting complicated here. The cytokine storm is what kills people. It's the inflammation. It's your body's immune system going nuts and basically thinking your body is the enemy. If your immune system turns on you, that's what kills people. It's not the virus. It's the reaction to the virus. It's a cytokine storm, and that's what you really have to prevent. And that's the thing that these ventilators can't stop, because all they do is they just prolong the agony. You know, once it gets so bad, you got to kill the virus. Before it gets to trillions and trillions in your system, that's what you have to do. And this is why these drugs, hydroxychloroquine still seems the one. 60 years going strong. You know, nothing's found to be better yet. You know, it's like penicillin still out there. You know, still stopping infections. What's this with antibiotics? Who said antibiotics? Antibiotics are for bacteria. You know, yeah. There's a difference. Chelsea, go ahead.
Greg, antibiotics is not going to kill the COVID at all. At all.
No.
It's just wasting. It's not. And
it's for bacteria.
The other thing I wanted to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. The other thing I wanted to say, I'm so disappointed in a lot of our doctors that they're refusing to take the vaccine themselves. And some teachers in our college, because I met one, and they're allowing all the students to get the shot, and they're going to walk out of the job because they refuse to take the shot. So these people, I don't see how they can sleep at night. And also, a lot of the professional doctors are saying, if you're not vaccinated, you cannot come to the office. We're going to cancel your appointment.
They said that
with masks,
too.
Hearing it more and more now.
Huh.
No, this is sad.
Yeah, this is unethical too. Okay. David, that hospital that's treated by ivermectin, can we talk about them publicly? I mean, you know, I don't want to, just in case they're going against the CDC guidelines, which don't exist. But is this something, you know, ask them, because it sounds like they're doing the right thing. Even if ivermectin isn't effective.
I'll reach out to the administrator of the hospital and see if they want to come. And talk about the way they're treating it and see what their response to that is.
Okay. Are they mandating their employees get vaccinated or no?
No.
See, that makes sense. See how consistent this is. This is really important, that the hospital that knows the treatment, ivermectin, and I'm not familiar with that. Hydroxychloroquine is the one I know about because of my association with Dr. Zelenko, amazing friend of the show. You know, still hoping to get him back here fairly soon. But you know, it all comes down to, do you believe that people can make their own health decisions, or do you want the government pharmaceutical complex to mandate an experimental vaccine and force on everybody? I want to break at the top of the hour, and I'm going to get to some other things in the next hour. But the last question I have for both of you is on FDA approval. You know, is the Biden insurrection and Dr. Fascist at the Center for Direct Control, the CDC, are they forcing the FDA, or are they doing, is the FDA doing it willingly, to rush an approval process that normally takes 10 to 15 years to see the long-term effects? Are they forcing it on that to get rid of any, to get rid of the experimental use authorization? And are they approving something that they have no business approving simply for the sake of selling it and forcing it on the rest of us? And let's go, David. Let's get your opinion on that.
I would use the word incentivize. I think that the FDA is being well incentivized to approve this experimental medicine that they're pawning off as a vaccine. I think the Biden administration is absolutely doing that.
Yeah. Jesse, what do you think? And then I want to ask you a question on Medicare.
My opinion is they are getting blackmailed, and they will cave in. And
the FDA?
It's coming. The FDA approval is coming. Hopefully Donald Trump will be back before that. We're praying. We have big teams praying that this doesn't happen. In our military, we'll be doomed if that happens because they don't have any choice but to take the jab. And,
well, actually, they do.
They
can leave, and I hate to say that because it screws up their career. But I don't. Does anybody know the Military Code of Justice? You know, provision. Where is the code in the military code that says that they have to take an experimental substance?
I think it's Code 92. Code 92, I believe it is. Code 92. They can be punishment and consignment or something like that. It's cool, and they can be dishonored and kicked out of the military.
Yeah. I thought it was only for deployment that they could do that, but even then, yeah.
No.
All right, Josie.
No, once the FDA approves it, they have to obey. And you know what I say? Bye-bye. Dishonor me. Do whatever you want. My life is more important than your stupidity, criminal ways that you're doing things. And I think what they're doing is they want to wipe out most of the military, because the Biden is going to refuse to leave the White House, the criminal, crook. He's going to refuse to leave the White House, and that's why they're wiping out most of the military. And they also have a lot of military. Yes. Oh, yeah, it's a plan.
Well,
I see this
two separate events. So I think the Democrats are going to refuse because they want the power. I think the geldings are going to sit around and do nothing and, you know, play with themselves in the corner like they normally do. I think it's a separate issue. I think the military, you know, I see this as the same thing as Gulf War syndrome. They're just going along. It's political. You know, the political decision, the leaders of the military are political operatives of an illegal insurrection that's currently occupying the White House. So it's nothing for an illegal administration doing illegal things. You know, and anybody that remembers Gulf War syndrome, you know, the parents of a lot of these the kids that are in the military now are still being affected by Gulf War syndrome, a faulty anthrax vaccine. So why those parents would say to their kids, hey, look, you know, to stay in, get the hell out. If this is what the military is doing, leave. You don't have to do this. You know, and that's something that's very critical. Go ahead, Josie, and then I got one more question.
You still have an innocent mind compared to mine about all that is the agenda that is going on.
Someone's got to be an optimist
the
here.
The sad thing about this whole military thing is the military is supposed to protect and defend our country, our people. Mm-hmm. When we go to the Middle East, when we go to any place to fight, the commander's in charge to protect their lives. A lot of times some of the leaders, they rather risk or lose their lives to protect their young men. But in this case, they're forcing them because a team just came back a month ago from the Middle East, and they were deployed, all these young men, as young as not 20, I think it was, some of the guys.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and they told them, okay, if you expect to go home after over a year that they were out there, you have to get the shot. And they all caved in. Yes. And this is sad how they're giving them an ultimatum. Okay, if you want to go see your mommy and daddy, you better get the little shot. And they really wanted to come back. And they did, because I was talking to a young military man that he's all unit. They all took the shot. And now what they're doing at the border, even though they're illegal children, they're vaccinating all the illegal children, all the little kids. And I don't know if you men here know that a little boy that I personally know now with the parents, he's having heart pain every day, this little boy. And they're afraid to take him to the hospital because I guess they're illegal. So he said they asked for political asylum, but I think he kind of was lying. I don't know.
No, most people ask for political asylum.
But this is a crime.
Let me ask you one question, and then we're sort of moving to some different stuff here. Medicare. David made an incredible point earlier that there's a possibility that the Biden insurrection has told all the hospitals, unless their staff is 100% vaccinated, that the government's not going to pay the Medicare bills. Do you know anything about that, Josie?
I don't know anything about that far. I can ask.
Okay.
I'll find out.
Yeah. Let's find out about that, because that's huge. That is a massive coercive effort that I would imagine, you know, this should be illegal as well as everything else that's going on. Then I want to get back to David. Go ahead, Josie.
But you know, the CDC, they're even reaching some of the dentists. My daughter's husband, he's been with dental issue like for 6 months. And they say, you cannot, you're not allowed to go to the dentist yet and all that. So they're controlling everything. These people are criminals.
Yeah, the best thing on the federal level is to get Donald Trump back to serve out the rest of his term. But the best thing on the local level is what, you know, David Jones and folks are doing is to work, you know, with these school boards and county commissions and city councils to give them the correct legislation that they should be passing. So, hey, this is what we want, you know. Anyway, David, I'm sure you have to go soon, so I'm going to get you in here just to get your last word.
Nope, just anybody who can show up this afternoon in front of Ascension Sacred Heart. We need the numbers out there as much as possible. There's also a Republican Executive Committee meeting Thursday night at 5:30 at Grover T's Barbecue. So anybody who is a member or wishes to see how that process works, come out, because I'm not real happy with the Republican Party, but it's a great platform. So the only way we can make changes is from the inside, and that's where we're working with them.
Okay. Well, I'm going to talk to you more about that. But it's Grover T's, and when is it? Friday?
Thursday. Thursday night, 5:30, Grover.
5:30, so that's tomorrow night. Okay. Sounds good. All right. Thank you, David. Thank you very much for – and that's our Santa Rosa Volunteer, 1776.com. Any other information you want to give?
The Facebook page is the Rise Patriots, so either one of those is a great way to reach out to us.
Sounds good. All right, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll do it again next week. I keep keeping them longer. Start off like 15 minutes and 20 minutes and half an hour and then 45, and now we're up over an hour. See what happens on the show? It's contagious. We just keep going. Josie, I want to play Santa Rosa Volunteers piece for this week on the Sedition Acts, which I think you might find interesting. So I'm going to put you on hold for about 7 minutes, and if you're still around, then we shall continue. I want to get onto the airlines and talk about them a little bit in the second hour.
Okay.
And so there we go. Just mute Josie's line. And that way, the reason I mute lines for folks that are new to the show is because, you know, anything, any background noise comes out over the air. People can mute their own phones. That's fine. But just to make sure, I'll do that as well. So that gives people the option. All right, let me play you Santa Rosa Volunteers. And that's David Jones. That's the organization that is sponsoring us and has commissioned me to make these special reports on our founding documents. So I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor. This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States. In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States or anyone in it is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases. The key words here are under the direction of the court. The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. I bring Josie back live now and get your reaction. Did you hear that yesterday when I played it? I don't know if you did. I'm not sure. Anyway, we're back.
I did a little bit, but I was trying to make my shake, my protein shake with a blender.
Oh, shake. That's not what I thought you said. I'm not going to repeat what I thought
I
you
know.
Said. Crack me up.
My
all right.
Shake.
Shake. That's okay. Not all right. Good. Well, your accent occasionally makes interesting sounding words. Don't mind me. Anybody else wants to join us, you know, feel free. 215-383-3832. The reason I don't know the phone number every 5 seconds is because when you tune into the show, you know, and you look at the Blog Talk Radio page, you know, where we are, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction, the phone number is right there. So it's not hard to find. I mean, we try to make these things as accessible as possible. And when Gene joins us producing, we're going to add the live chat feature too. So you'd be able to type messages into the show to Gene. She'll answer or she'll bring it up to me or we'll talk about it on the – yeah, we're always increasing. We're always increasing our capacity here.
Yeah, that's good.
It is good. It is. This is a developing show. You know, we're not stuck in a format by some idiot, you know, program person that says what we can't do. I don't believe in what we can't do. I'm only interested in what we can do. And so that's that can-do attitude we have out here. Yeah. But yeah, we're going to have live chat. We're going to have Gene producing. We're going to have call screening. We're going to have all kinds of things that are going to be very, very, very good for the show. And, of course, we'll have, you know, one more person booking and looking into different guests and, you know, all kinds of things. The show is growing. What's most interesting is the podcast.
Good.
You know, every once in a while I do searches and I see another podcast has picked up Action Radio. So there's a lot of places you can hear us besides Blog Talk. I like you listening on Blog Talk because, you know, I can see the numbers more clearly. But there's probably 10 different podcast sites right now that we're on. You know, and the fact that we ended up in Lithuania is pretty exciting. This is good stuff.
That's
all right.
Good.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We're
did you get
to
see? Did you get to see yesterday, Mike Lindell?
Yeah, I did. I saw a whole
he
bunch
was
of
live.
It. Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna be. But apparently, I'm working tomorrow, so I'm gonna miss whatever the big news is. I'm sure I'll hear about it at night. But he's got some big thing to announce tomorrow, and I'm not sure what that is. But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So far, it's been stuff I knew, which is good, and it has some interesting guests on. So you know, not a whole lot of news yet.
Well,
but for people that don't know about it,
they had
go ahead.
They had a few people there telling some of their stuff, and I'm not sure the position because I was in between customer trying to listen, and I noticed there was a lady that came from Colorado. I think she's an official. I don't know what her position is exactly, but she was on the way to the Mike Lindell show to expose these criminals. The Dominion team came to her office and raided her office. They broke in into her office and went through all her stuff, and nobody did anything. The police didn't do anything. Nobody did anything. And this is not good because they're not the FBI. They're not the police. This is the Dominion team, Greg. And they came and broke in her office and took all the information that they wanted.
Yeah.
Huh?
So that's different than what I heard. I heard it was the Secretary of State, Jenna something. I heard she's the one that did it.
Yeah, it's a woman. Like I said, I don't know her position. I didn't hear. And I haven't had time to replay the thing. But
no.
They broke in and in her office.
Well, they definitely broke in. Yeah,
they
right
raided
there.
Her office.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are the Dominions now in charge of coming without a warrant? To come and go through all your personal stuff in your office? I mean, come on. What is
that?
So
I don't think Dominion would do that. I don't think Dominion would be stupid enough to walk into somebody's office. But what they would do is they would talk to Jenna, Secretary of State of Colorado, George Soros, you know, plant and talk to her head and say what to look for. You know, and that, you know, there's two things that go on. You don't know what they're taking out because what they're taking out is basically public knowledge. I'm not so much worried about what they're taking out. Because I'm sure that's all duplicated. I'm more worried about what they're putting in. What, you know, are they bugging the place? Are they, are they putting, are they changing the machines? Are they taking, you know, the G4 modems out of the Dominion machines? I don't know what they're doing.
I don't know.
But that's the real question. And so what you can say is the office is broken into. Nobody from that office is there for a certain time. So any evidence found is tampered. Is you know, fruit of the poisonous tree, as they say, because it was gained, you know, anything that's there that they find in a subsequent search, it, you know, very possibly was there illegally, mm-hmm. planted by this team that was already there. So in many ways, they sort of, you know, put themselves against, if they have a decent lawyer, you know, I think Mike Lindell has, he's got this thing called red teams. Do you know what a red team is? Have you heard of that term?
A
Do you know what they are? Yeah. What are they?
I don't know.
Okay. I don't either.
I don't know.
It sounds dangerous and nasty. It sounds like a, you know, what I'm hoping to do is form cybersecurity, you know, retaliatory teams, that if someone goes after me or one of my friends or one of my Action Radio people, that we have a cybersecurity strike force that I'll just go back and, you know, dox the dockers, you know, it's, you know, we'll call it Action Radio Docs. We comes something over there. Anyway, I'll talk about the airlines because this is a story that's been around for almost 2 weeks now, but it hasn't gotten quite the attention I think it should, and that's the airlines are getting more violent.
Uh-huh.
The passengers are getting more violent. And 75% of the problems have to do with the mask issue. So, of course, the easy solution is stop requiring the damn mask, you idiot airlines. They don't do anything. You know, they could, we went over how they could have air samplers that will tell you if COVID's in the air. We've told you that 15%, that airliners are 15 times cleaner than your home. And hospitals are 5 times cleaner than your home as far as the quality of the air. Your home sucks, okay? You people in your homes, that's where you're getting COVID in your homes, because your home sucks. You know, get healthy. Get your immune system up. But leave the damn airlines alone, because it used to be fun. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I was like, you know, 5 years old. Airlines were, of course, at five, everything to me was fun. So that was a different story.
Yeah.
But, you know, even in my teen years, we took a trip from Lexington High School, where I went to school in Massachusetts, you know, all the way out to the Grand Canyon. We went to Yosemite. We went to Death Valley. You know, they picked 30 kids they think they thought they could trust. And they also picked me. Anyway, so we were flying. But, you know, airline, when I was a teenager, this is the 70s, all right? It was a blast.
Yeah.
I've been in the country, what, 3 or 4 years? And they take me to all these cool places. This is a nice country. I like this place. Anyway, but airlines were fun. We had a good time, you know, and airlines were fun through the 80s. Yeah. You know, when I went to Europe, you know, and I went various different trips. And I remember taking a train trip across the whole country. You know, when I was 28, I spent 2.5 months going around the United States by train. I spent almost 3 months going around Europe by train a few years earlier. Travel was a blast. I miss the 80s. The 80s were fun. We had the best music, except for the guys wearing spandex and makeup. But, you know, nobody's perfect, right? But we had great music. We had Reagan. We had fun. We had rock and roll. We had fun, till daddy takes the T-Bird away. Well, that was the 60s. But, you know, the 60s had their problems. But the 80s were generally fun. We had Ronald Reagan. The wall came down. Life was good. So I really feel sorry for the kids today that missed the 80s, because you really missed a big party. I had a blast. I saw Spinal Tap live in Boston. Do, 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 do.
Uh-oh, there's the music, man.
The music, my band's getting ready to play out. So we're rehearsing Saturday. We're going to be great.
Good.
So be able to see my group. Yeah.
But you're right. It's so much fun to travel by train in Europe. I spent a month in between Spain and Portugal traveling by train.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. Do you speak Portuguese?
The other thing I was going to say. Huh?
Do you speak Portuguese too?
No.
Okay, fine.
I understand.
I don't speak Portuguese either.
No fala. Fala means speak. No, I don't fala Portuguese. But I understand a little bit from a lot of different countries, a few words. I think it's kind of cool. And Korean and Iran, just a lot of countries. I know a couple words here and there. I love languages. But what I was going to say about the mask,
mm-hmm.
when you buy an airline ticket right now, you mm-hmm. have to agree, because they have a section that you have to do a check mark. You have to read it. So you agreed that you will be wearing the mask inside the airplane. So I don't know. If you're going to travel, you know that you're going to have to do that. And, mm-hmm. you know, even though you don't like it, like I don't, but I was eating the whole time once I was inside. The flight attendant, she was going to wonder when was I going to stop eating. I said, I'm very hungry, but I was eating very slow, one M&M, two M&M, three, you know, and then took a sip of Coke. And almost the whole flight, I didn't put the mask on because I was eating. And they were not too happy with me. But, hey, they say you can take your mask off if you're eating. So I did. But you do have to sign this waiver when you buy your ticket to anywhere that you will agree to wear the mask. So I don't know why these people are putting a fit. I mean, if they already agree. So anyway.
Well, it's interesting. I got an article here. I got to go over a couple of them in our 35 minutes left. But that, see, I haven't flown since 2018. Last time I went to the CPAC convention, and it was interesting. I was flying on Delta, and they had one of those old MD-80s. You know, the old DC-9s. You know, the two engines in the back. And it was interesting. I'll tell you, this is kind of a funny adventure. And, of course, me being a flight instructor, I notice when things are wrong. And one of the covers for one of the flap mechanisms, the connector of the flaps, had fallen off somewhere along the way. Or it was never there. I'm not sure which.
Oh, no.
Anyway, so I'm looking at this exposed, you know, winch mechanism that winds the flaps down. And I thought, well, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Should I, you know, I'm thinking to myself, who should I report this to? So eventually I told the flight.
Should I tell them?
I told him. I said, look, I think you're missing a part here. But I told him in secret, you know, in the back of the airplane. I said, I don't think it's a problem because we haven't fallen out of the sky, but I'm just saying, just to let you know that there is a cover missing. It was just the cover missing on one of your flap mechanisms because this is right up in my window. I saw it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here's the funny part. So, so Delta, you know, just to let you know what your airline captain told me a couple of years ago. So I went back to, the passengers left, and of course I didn't want to embarrass him. I said, sir, Mr. Captain, sir, you know, I said, I think one of your covers is missing. Well, what do you know about the MD-80 airplane? Are you ready to fly it? Are you a pilot yourself? Well, actually I was, right? Okay. You know, as a flight instructor, I said, what do you know about this? I said, well, actually I know a little bit, not as much as you, sir, but I you know, it's not like I was born yesterday. I've, you know, my first lesson when I was, 12 years old, I've been around airplanes most of my life, right? And so I know what a flap cover is missing. And he says, well, we're certified to do that, so we can have a missing part. I said, oh, yeah, what other parts can you have missing and still fly? Now I'm embarrassing him, right? You know, anything that's really mad at me. Thank you for flying Delta. It's a pleasure to have you on board. Why don't you move along now? In other words, you know, I caught him. I said, look, dude, you got a part missing in your airplane. And I saw it. You know, at least if you're going to have something missing, don't expose it to all the passengers. You know, anyway, so much for Delta. All right. So don't fly old airplanes. My lesson from that, you know, I had a flight attendant friend of mine who was also taking lessons years ago. He said, don't board unless it's Boeing. You know, Boeing makes good, at least they used to. This is back in the good days when, you know, from the original 707 in 1959 until the 747, you know, they made incredible airplanes. And the original 737s that everybody flies on, those are good too, the earlier versions. The latest one, the MAX, no. The engines are too close to the ground, folks. They basically tried to make a bigger airplane cheaply. They should have made a new airplane, but they didn't do it. You know, anyway. All right. So, article here from ABC News of all places. FAA seeks prosecution of unruly airline passengers. So this is a typical government solution, right? So they want to prosecute people that are getting violent on airplanes. Why are people getting violent on airplanes? Well, the mask mandate. Why? Because, well, here's a question for you. This I don't know. Do masks at altitude make people behave worse than they would without them? And the reason I'm asking, and I talked to Judy Mikovits about this, she didn't know this, that airliners are not pressurized to sea level. Airlines are pressurized to 8,000 feet. 8,000 feet is like 90% of the oxygen you get at sea level. But anybody who's been spending any time in Denver, Colorado, at 5,000 feet knows the air is thinner up there. Okay?
Yeah.
So at 8,000 feet, it's even thinner still. At 10,000 feet, commercial pilots are required to go on oxygen. So the airliners are pressurized to 2,000 feet below where pilots have to go on oxygen. Think about that. That's how little air there is at 10,000 feet. And on top of that, you're putting masks on top of people? What the hell is that doing?
No, it's sad. It's sad. And you love,
and then you have them drink.
You sit and everybody
and then they're drinking.
Looks like a little sheep with all their little masks.
Yeah, but think about this. If you're I should get a flight. I'm going to see if I can FAA doc on the line. No, they're not going to talk to me. If you're an FAA doc, call me 215-383-3832. But there's the question for you. You know, if you combine alcohol, which restricts your oxygen, masks, which restricts your oxygen, and the cabin pressure to 8,000 feet, which restricts your oxygen, we got three sources of oxygen deprivation. Does that contribute to bad behavior? I don't know if anybody's looked into that.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
Well, that's when we research after the show. Yeah, I'll have a follow-up on that. Anyway, the article says the nation's top aviation regulator is suggesting that local police around the country should file charges more often against unruly airline passengers, and the airport should clamp down on alcohol sales. Well, they're trying to get that angle. Federal Aviation Administration Chief Ben Dixon said that every week police are asked to be there when a flight lands after an incident involving passengers, including cases in which they assault flight attendants. Well, first of all, this is federal. Folks, this is the DOT. Airlines are under the Department of Transportation. Mm-hmm. They have a federal jurisdiction. Local law enforcement, as far as I know, doesn't have any jurisdiction over the airlines. Because once you're on an airport, you're part of the international transit system. It is illegal to interfere on interstate commerce of airlines, of rail, trucking, of interstate highways. That's all national infrastructure. That's DOT. That's federally protected.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I'm not sure why he's doing that. Anyway, we got some stats here that you might find interesting. So the letter went out to more than 500 airports and 2 airport trade groups. We'll see where's the airline consumer groups? Remember the ones that used to complain when the airplanes were late? Where are they? How come they're complaining about masks? You know, I got to find out about that too. Article says this week the FAA, and this is from ABC News, just to give you an idea. David Koenig, AP Airlines writer. So I guess he knows what he's talking about or thinks. August 5th, 2021, ABC News, and he says, this week, the FAA said airlines have reported 3,715 incidents involving unruly passengers since January 1st. Wait a minute. 3,715 incidents involving unruly passengers just this year? That's insane. With about three-fourths of the events involving people who refuse to wear masks, as the federal government requires on airline flights. Well, does the federal government require it on airline flights? No, because the CDC is not a regulatory agency. They can't require anything except to stop people coming into the country who have an obviously transmissible disease because they have the symptoms. That's it, folks.
Yeah.
That's their authority. So go ahead.
They're coming sick. A lot of these people, all the illegals are coming sick with something.
Well, that's a different story.
It's sad.
We're just talking about incidents of Americans, I imagine, for the most part. Unruly passengers, three-fourths of the events involving people refusing to wear masks. So the obvious solution is, if you want to stop 75% of the problem, stop wearing masks. They don't do anything. Here's the thing, too. How come no one ever looks for alternatives, like, I don't know, air sampling equipment that tests for viruses in the air? You know, it wouldn't cost the airlines much to put an air sampler, 3 of them, you know, the front of the plane, the back of the plane, the middle of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
How much would that cost? You know, I've already looked up the companies. There are companies that do that. Airlines, just look them up. Put air samplers that constantly monitor for viruses. If they don't detect viruses in the air, there's no reason to wear masks. Hello? Oh, God. We're surrounded by. What's that?
The masks, they don't work unless you have an N95 while you do surgery.
Yeah.
I get a lot of people with those fancy masks right now. I had a lady that walked in with a fancy, it looks like a metallic or made out of metal, but all the little holes like a show, like a fashion. I'm like, what the heck is that? You know?
Was it Halloween or what?
They love it.
Huh.
I don't know. They sell them over here. They come from China, all those things. They're like heavy. It's like almost like aluminum or metal or something that, you know, with all the tiny little holes just for fashion. I'm like, that doesn't do anything. And I tell you, you're welcome to take the mask. Oh, I'm so used to wearing it. I said, well, get unused to, you know?
Yeah, you had to get used to wearing it. Why can't you get used to unwearing it? I don't want to, I'm not used to you wearing it. I'm not used to anybody wearing it.
And you know, like you have said before, people are not thinking, if the mask really works, how come we're still wearing them after a year and whatever month it is now? They don't work. They don't work. They do not work.
Well, you're absolutely right. Having myself quoted. But think about this, too. If the Delta variant is rising and people are wearing more and more masks and getting more and more vaccinated, then the cause, you know, would logically be the masks and the vaccines and the lockdowns. If lockdowns work and masks work, we wouldn't have COVID. There'd be no reason to do it again. Why would you do again something that didn't work last year? That doesn't make any sense.
But did you know where did it work? The lockdown for 14, 15 days and the mask in China because the virus is gone over there. It worked there, but not here. Why? Because whatever they injected on those vaccines, Now that people have the Delta virus coming out of vaccinated people, and they're doing something else, and those blue masks are contaminated too. That when you breathe it, the heat of your breath, it activates those tiny little worms inside those blue masks.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a video, and I was going to show it to somebody the other day, and they already deleted it. It was in Ukrainian, because I understand a lot of Ukrainian, and my friend translated the stuff that I didn't understand on the video.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to find out what kind of worms they are, because Judy Mikovits said the same thing. Dr. Mikovits said that there are worms in these masks.
You can see them moving. The
oh,
breath,
really?
the heat of the breath, after an hour, 2 hours wearing the mask, it activates the tiny little worms. They're very tiny. You have to get a magnifying glass to see it clear, and you can see them. Oh, yeah. But they have.
Do they get ingested into your system? Are they dangerous to human beings? Because, we eat all kinds of crap all day long. Nobody knows how many.
Apparently, because that's what China planted millions and millions of the masks that they're making. They're putting chemicals. And also, I believe a lot of the toothpaste and all the stuff that you buy at the dollar store is contaminated to give us cancer. Because I bought a toothpaste at Walmart, and it was kind of weird inside. It was kind of like runny. And toothpaste is not runny like that. Never. I have never seen anything like it. And I threw it out.
Stick with Colgate or Crest.
And toothpaste doesn't spoil either.
No, Colgate or Crest. Get the real stuff. Get farmers, because they have pharmaceutical grade fluoride, which is different than the fluoride they add to your water systems, which is a chemical waste product. That's a different story. Is our water fluoridated in Milton here, or not?
I don't know. Good question. You can ask Shannon.
I will.
Greg, I'm going to continue listen because I have to get ready. I have to be at the pharmacy this morning getting some of my medicines and.
Okay.
I have to open at 10, and
okay, don't busy. Explain it. I understand. We're local radio, but we're not that local.
The only good thing about this COVID for me, let me tell you, yesterday I didn't have lunch. I didn't have time.
Yeah.
The nurses are really packing my store. Yesterday was this whole week, actually.
Wow.
So everybody's getting scrubbed, and some of the nurses are throwing the scrubs after they leave the COVID room. It's like when it first started, too. So they're wearing those space suits and the COVID unit. I have friends in the COVID unit, actually. I have one girlfriend, and she got COVID. She tested positive yesterday. I told her what to take, and she's an RN.
Oh, yeah, and that's
crazy.
The funny thing. People say, well, you're not an expert. How do you know? Well, we read, we study, we talk to real
we
experts,
know.
And that's how we know. I picked up my – I got my quercetin, my vitamin D3, I got my vitamin C, and I got my zinc lozenges. I'm cool. I'm worried – like I say, I worry about the people – who are vaccinated more, giving me something more than I ever worried about COVID, because I had COVID. Viruses don't bother me.
Yeah.
Manufactured crap that comes out of the CDC, that's what scares me.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
That bothers me.
Thank you for participating.
All right, God bless.
And God bless you too.
Okay, ciao.
All right. Not much time left, so I'll get that. I want to play a couple things real quick here just to let you know what we do here. And then let me see if I can find my – it's probably a good time to play my my Biden PSI. PSA. Let me see if I can find that real quick here, and I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back.
Action Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take. That is Action Radio.
Oh, the fun we have on the show. I've got a gazillion articles, which I didn't get to because we have, callers. You know, we had David Jones and Josie, who's on here. And I'd rather talk than to go over articles, although I read these and I can use that. So all the stuff I prep, kind of gets woven into our conversations here. So that's where a lot of this comes from. All right, so I found a website called Y'all Politics. That's Y'ALL Politics. And they have the Y'all Politics has an article from July 2nd, so it's a little bit older. I imagine I'm new to this website, so I'm going to check them out. But the headline is Senator Wicker, Time to End Mask Rules on Airplanes. And you can tell what a national story this became, because Senator Roger Wicker is all over the news, right? Yeah, exactly. So this was suppressed. This was put down. But anyway, the article says Americans who have recently set foot in an airport or a train station probably felt like they were stepping back in time. Although the pandemic is subsiding and masks are no longer required in most settings, those who wish to board a plane or a train are still being forced to wear masks, even if they are, quote, fully vaccinated. Yeah, right. Anyway, passengers are – I'm just reading the article. I'll comment later. Passengers are being instructed to wear masks on even while eating and drinking, quote, between bites and sips. You know how Josie dealt with that. Anyway, and it says as if doing so would actually stop the virus from spreading. Those who refuse to comply risk losing their seats, being denied service in the future, and even being fined. Americans are getting fed up with these overbearing rules that have no basis in scientific fact. Well, they have no basis in anything, really. It's just either paranoia, liability, or the fact that the government's doing something like David was alleging. We're going to find out if this is true, that the Biden insurrection, the coup, the Biden mafia is withholding Medicare payments from hospitals that don't have their staff, fully mRNA genetically, mRNA genetically, altered by the vaccine. And so that's extortion. All right. So I wonder if the airlines are being denied anything, because of that. But certain airlines aren't doing it. I got a story on that, too. They're not requiring their staff to be vaccinated. But this whole idea of masks is insane. Okay, so I want to deal with this for a little bit. So we know masks don't work. We know that airlines are 15 times cleaner in air than your house. We know that the air is recirculated more now than it was, a few years ago because of all the colds that people were getting. We know that there is filtration equipment and testing equipment that can tell if viruses are in the air. We know that viruses are everywhere. We know that COVID is spread by vaccinated people who shed their spike proteins, but it's spread mostly through airborne aerosols. Okay, aerosols are so tiny they go right through masks. Aerosols, when you sneeze, that kind of misty stuff that you can barely see, that's an aerosol. An aerosol is a suspension of particles in the air that are so tiny they can hang in the air. Gravity doesn't drag them down right away. So that's how small these particles are, that they can hang in the air, which means they go into the air conditioning, they go into the central air systems, they go into the heating, they go everywhere in your building. So if someone sneezes, on the first floor, it's on the 10th floor within 2 minutes? Yeah, sneeze virus. So it's everywhere, okay? You can't stop this stuff. So COVID, everybody's been exposed to COVID. Everybody was probably exposed. I mean, this is just a guess, but I'm just going to say, because we got it here in Florida back at the end of December of 2019, I'd say probably by the time that they had the slowest spread, everybody had been exposed to it. Now, did everybody get sick? No. The people who got sick were the people in nursing homes who were already at the short end of life's journey anyway. Those are the people. Most of the people have died in nursing homes, okay, because they're the most vulnerable people. They obviously cannot take care of themselves, and so those are the people that you want to protect the most. And of course, that's why, Cuomo. I haven't spoken about Cuomo yet. That's why Cuomo, put all those people in the nursing homes, either to either were short-sighted, negligent, or he's a mass murderer who just wanted to kill off the old folks so he didn't have to pay for them. We don't know yet, and we won't know because he was allowed to resign. See, he should never have been allowed to resign, okay? That's the stupidity of this. People think, it's great, he's resigned, yeah. But he may still get his pension. I'm sure he's avoided criminal charges because they're moot now. He's resigned. He's not going to be governor. Well, you can't charge him for crimes of being governor when he's not governor anymore. So this is his get-out-of-jail-free card. All right. And also, he should, all those women, I guarantee you the women that made accusations against him, are going to be paid off to not continue it. They could do it as a private citizen. If someone sexually harasses you, if someone assaults you, okay, if there's a sexual assault, okay, I don't care if you're governor or not, you can still be prosecuted for that. But I bet you those folks are going to be paid off. So the fact that Cuomo's resigning is terrible news. That's why, because it's going to allow him to escape all of his crimes. And that shouldn't happen. All right. So back to y'all politics, talking about masks. Senator Wicker says CDC should follow the science, which they don't do, because the CDC has nothing to do with science and everything to do with mass marketing of their product that they have the patents on, which are the COVID mRNA genetic alteration shots. The article says the huge strides we have made against COVID-19 have led public officials to end restrictions across the country, even though they're trying to bring them back now. Right? This is written back in June, right? Even in once locked down states like New York, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, which I call the Center for Direct Control, acknowledged its progress in May when it announced that fully vaccinated people no longer need to wear masks in most public spaces. They have since changed that to sell the product. Unfortunately, the CDC kept strict rules in place for public transportation, including aviation and rail. Well, they can't make rules. This is another flaw with the article. CDC doesn't make rules, folks. They don't. They offer suggestions, known as guidelines. That's all they can do. Okay? And it was requiring most travelers above 2 years old to continue wearing masks, even though children are at extremely low risk. Well, that is true. The Transportation Security Administration, the TSA, the folks that pat you down at airports, put you through metal detectors and check your shoes, for bombs from a thing that happened 20 years ago. They're still checking your shoes, right? Is enforcing this mandate until mid-September, meaning passengers will have to endure another 2 months of forced mask wearing. Well, let's see what happens in mid-September. Let's see if they get rid of it, all right? I find this all fascinating. So let's go, let's go to another article. Will masks be required on airlines forever? Yeah, this is another point. And this is from One Mile at a Time. Ben Schlappig published April 9th, 2021, so this year, but a little bit ago. And it says airline safety policies are often added, rarely reversed. This is why I found this article interesting. When you look at the pain points of airline travel, it's interesting the extent to which some policies have been introduced in the name of safety, but have never been undone. There are some changes that absolutely make sense, like reinforced cockpit doors, which are an easy, permanent solution that don't inconvenience anyone. Well, unless you're a kid, you want to see the flight deck while you're flying, something I used to do. Anyway, back to the article. But then look at some of the other policies in the airline industry that are more questionable. Bullet point, we are still not allowed to take liquids over 100 milliliters through security out of fear they might be explosive. We're still, for the most part, required to take our shoes off at airport security because in 2001, I told you 20 years ago, right? 2001, there was an attempted shoe bomber. We're still not allowed to congregate near bathrooms, exits, or lavatories on U.S.-bound flights out of fear we might be coordinating some sort of attack on the plane. And whenever a pilot uses the bathroom, a cart needs to be set up to block the way. God knows you don't want to walk in the pilot. That sort of I just find that fast. Well, actually, that's actually not a bad thing to protect the pilots. But it's just funny that they give their own restrooms up on the flight deck. All right. He says, forget the safety for a moment and just look at airline fuel surcharges. Boom. They were added when oil prices spiked, but have never been eliminated, even when oil prices were an all-time low. Yeah, so they're still paying extra for that in your airline ticket, folks. The point is, I can't think of many policy changes in the airline industry that were added and then later undone. Interesting. It says masks could be helpful long-term, but at what cost? Well, I don't agree that they're helpful, but, we'll just see. Coronavirus has taught me a lot about, this is the author, taught me a lot about health and human interaction in general. To some extent, the way I interact with humans will probably never be the same. For example, more bullet points. I have a hard time imagining going to a social event where there are dozens of people you're expected to hug and talk to in close proximity. Having gotten the flu a few years back on a trip to Asia, I have a new appreciation for how this was probably preventable to some extent. He says, I have a new appreciation for the outdoors, maintaining distance, etc. idiot. As I always say, I'm an introvert. So in some ways, the coronavirus hasn't been as tough on me as on others. I've never felt, if I never have to awkwardly hug someone again or have unnecessary small talk with strangers at some sort of social event, I'd be absolutely delighted. Well, it's interesting. You know, I'm going to leave this article there because that's not really as interesting as some of the other stuff I want to talk about. But yeah, the main point of this is that a lot of things the airlines do, they just never undo. And so this guy feel awkward. Yeah, well, you should feel awkward. Wearing a mask is awkward. It's not normal. It's not normal to have your face hidden. It used to be against the law. It was a mark of a criminal when they walk into a store wearing a mask. You know, now it's kind of different. All right. This is from Insider, July 7th, 2021. Sarah Jackson's the author. Clashes over masks make up more than 75% of unruly passenger complaints, new data reveals, as flight attendants describe unprecedented violence on the job. Yeah, okay. So their bullet points, more than 75% of the FAA's unruly passenger reports in 2021 come from people refusing to wear masks. Again, that should be, you know, just don't just sort of resting and do something about that. Do something about the problem. The problem is, let's analyze why they're wearing masks, and there is no legitimate reason for doing so. The FAA has received more than 3,200 reports of unruly passengers. Yeah. The new data comes as flight attendants worsening mental health over passenger aggression on board. Yeah, now that's an interesting thing. So your job security, your chosen career, you know, you should not be subject to assault as a flight attendant. That's not part of the job description, you know. It says 89%. Oh, that's a different thing. And it says, back to the article, the vast majority of the unruly passenger reports that the FAA gets have come from passengers refusing to wear masks. There's the same stats again. The FAA says it has identified potential violations in 540 cases so far this year. By comparison, the FAA initiated 183 investigations for all of last year and 146 investigations for the entirety of 2019, the last full year before the pandemic was declared. Interesting use of the word declared. The FAA has started to take enforcement action in 83 of this year's cases. Since January, the agency has proposed fines of more than $682,000 against unruly passengers. That's a lot of money. Where's that all going to go? Anyway, it says part of the FAA's reauthorization bill, the regulator can propose up to $37,000 per violation for unruly passenger cases. Previously, the maximum civil penalty for violation was $25,000. One incident can result in multiple violations. This is going to be a moneymaker for the FAA. That's the problem. The new data, back to the article, the new data comes as flight attendants report concerns for their mental health and safety due to the growing passenger aggression, which they say stems from a divided political climate. Yeah, right. And who divided it? Oh, the very people that are enforcing the mask mandate. What a surprise. All right. Alcohol available on board and enforcement of mask mandates. You know, they never mentioned the depletion of oxygen at 8,000 feet. You notice that? That seems to be absent from all these things. That is your greatest problem. We know masks cause you to rebreathe more of your own carbon dioxide, lowering your oxygen content of your blood. So why would you lower the oxygen content of blood that's already been lowered because their cabin pressure is 8,000 feet? Everybody seems to miss that, and the FAA should know better. They're the ones that have the requirement for, you know, how what altitude these things can be it'd be done. I think if the airlines had their way, they'd probably pressurize it to 10,000 feet so everybody would go to sleep, you know, through oxygen deprivation. So basically, we're going to partially suffocate all the passengers, put them out. That way, though, they won't be unruly, and the flight attendants will walk around wearing oxygen. I don't know. We don't know where this stuff's going to go. I'm just asking the questions here. Anyway, in June, several airline groups expressed their concerns in a letter to the Department of Justice. Department of Justice? Wait a minute. The FAA is under the Department of Transportation. Call me crazy. Just like to point these things out. Right? Letter asking Attorney General Merrick Garland. Oh, he's the guy that wants to sabotage the Arizona audit so that he can stay in power with his fellow insurrectionist, Joe Biden. I know who Attorney General Merrick Garland is. You know, it's a good thing that guy never ended up in the Supreme Court. Anyway, prosecute unruly passengers. The trade group also wrote to – why don't they mention the trade group? Who are they? Anyway, the trade group also wrote to FAA's Chief Steve Dixon seeking a larger crackdown on escalating passenger violence. What do you think? You want to wear a mask on a plane? Think that's worth doing? Don't think so. Let's see what we got. Let me give you some good news here. We've got a few minutes left. Let me give you some good news. The good news is, in the last 6 minutes, this is from Breitbart, Delta, Southwest, American Airlines, no vaccine mandate for employees. Do you know pilots are dying from the COVID vaccine? I think British Airways, there was a story a while back, they lost 4 pilots. All right. So here's the question for you. Do you want to fly on an airliner with a vaccinated flight crew? Just asking the question, you know, should flight crews be required to declare their vaccine status before passengers board? How's that for a can of worms to open up? All right. What if flights were, you know, if you looked on the airline schedule, it has the departure time, the gate, you know, flight crew vaccinated, yes or no? What if that was a criteria on those, you know, TV screens and boards that they have all over the airports? You know, what if you knew ahead of time, you know, if you had a vaccinated or non-vaccinated crew, wouldn't that be interesting? I don't know. I'm just asking the question. If I were an airline consumer group, that's the first thing I'd say is, look, you know, we can't stop people getting vaccinated. We don't want to, and we can't, we want to stop mandates so people don't have to get vaccinated. But I think it'd be an interesting disclosure if passengers had the choice of a vaccinated flight crew or a normal flight crew. Let's put it that way, a non-GMA genetically modified flight crew. All right, so let's get to the story here. So this is Breitbart, Delta, Southwest, August 10th, so yesterday. Delta, Southwest, and American Airlines have all stated there will be no vaccination mandates for their employees. Isn't that nice? Now, why are they doing that that other airlines aren't? I think Spirit and there's another one. I think Spirit Airlines has a problem with they have a problem with vaccine mandates. All right. Anyways, the article says, according to an internal memo obtained by CNN, oh my God, CNN broke a story. You know, Southwest CEO Gary Kelly reaffirmed the company's stance that it will, quote, strongly encourage employees to get vaccinated without mandating it. Yeah. If employers want to strongly encourage it, they can strongly encourage it all they want. That's fine because employers should strongly encourage all kinds of things. Like, I don't know, honesty, you know, courtesy. Employers are perfectly within their rights to, or their powers to strongly encourage all kinds of things. No problem. Yeah. Just don't mandate it. Don't mandate something that directly affects a person's body and their personal health. Article says, back to the quote, obviously I am very concerned about the latest Delta variant. Sorry. So if you fly Delta and you have the Delta variant, what does that mean? Oh, God, I'm getting punchy here. All right, so is there a Delta variant? Delta, I'm having too much fun with you. See what happens when you leave the cover off one of your flap mechanisms, and I notice? I still remember it. Anyway, very concerned about Delta variant. And back to the quote, I'm sorry. And the effect on the health and safety of our employees and our operation, but nothing has changed. Okay, think about that. They're more concerned about, you know, some companies are more concerned about mandating a vaccine than they are concerned about the health of their employees from getting the vaccine. That to me is backwards. Okay, you're concerned about the wrong thing. So, let's sort of expand here a little bit on something I've been thinking about for a while. The perception is still out there that COVID is fatal. If you get COVID, you're going to die. That's still in people's minds. They're not saying it. The CDC is not saying it. It's obviously not true. So they can't come out with it. But they've given every impression, and they have this weighing on people's minds that if you get COVID, you're going to die. The other thing they're putting in people's heads, if you get the vaccination, you can't get COVID and therefore you can't die, you know, well, eventually, you know, but that's what they're saying. And of course, that's not true either, right? Because the vaccination, according to the CDC, only lessens the symptoms. It doesn't stop you getting it, doesn't stop you transmitting it, doesn't stop you infecting other people with spike proteins, doesn't do any of those things. All it does is allegedly, I mean, I'm not even sure it does this, I doubt that it does this, lessens the symptoms, but actually it causes the variants. Because, and I'll explain this as quickly as I can, the original SARS-CoV-2 is gone. COVID-19 is gone. All we have left are the variants. Your immune system can handle the variants because it handled the original SARS-CoV-2. When it handled that, it handled all the future variants because your body has immune memory. It's got a memory for what it did, and it can instantly activate and modify itself to the variants, okay? But chemical immunity, vaccine immunity, it doesn't work that way. Vaccine immunity only works for the specific strain that you're being vaccinated for. If you're being vaccinated for a strain that no longer exists, your vaccine is useless. And then, of course, there's my 90-second warning. Then, of course, you have all the other dangerous effects of it. All right, but these fundamental beliefs that you're going to die if you get COVID, that you can transmit it if you don't have symptoms, that's wrong too. So this whole thing is based on these wrong assumptions. So everything from mask mandates to vaccine mandates, so all these different mandates, all these different things that are going on, you know, they're all based on wrong assumptions, okay? Most people, 99% of people, do just fine with COVID with no treatment whatsoever, all right? You know, masks do not stop viruses. They're absolutely useless unless you're in a hospital setting with an N95, you know, secure mask, and then they're only good for a few hours, all right? COVID is not a death sentence. It's just not. So all if you get rid of the assumptions, remember we've talked about this before on the show, how assumptions are stronger than truth. Okay. So the assumptions are guiding people. Generally, if you find somebody who is panicking about COVID, they're going by the assumptions. They're not going by truth. So it's our job to get them truth. The truth is that masks are useless. The truth is your immune system is more powerful than COVID. Okay. The truth is that if you're on the short end of life's journey, you're very vulnerable to this and you should be protected. But sooner or later, something's going to get all of us. That's just the truth. Okay. So live a good life. Do what you want to do. Don't wait for you know, the day to come when you want to try things. Do it now, because sooner or later, you're going to run out of time. You know, there was a movie called Breaker Morant. Let me end on this. I got just a few seconds left. Breaker Morant, Australian film, Peter Weir. Great film. I think it came out in the 80s. And one of the main characters says, live every day as if it were your last. For one day, you're sure to be right. And on that happy note, let me leave you. This is Craig Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can support us at patreon.com/actionradio. And you can listen to us driving anywhere you want by simply putting us into your phone, connect phone to car audio. And there we are. We're your drive time. I'll talk to you tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock Eastern. 7 o'clock Central Time. And I will see you then.